Hey, everyone. Just a warning here at the top. This episode mentions sexual assault. It's going to happen a few times. The references go by fast. They're not graphic, but we wanted to give you a heads up. Thanks.
Okay, so yeah, all right. So I've got the embedded tweet. It's the second one down.
I called up Rebecca Schumann because I wanted to watch this video with her.
It's a tweet from UCLA Gymnastics that says a 10 isn't enough.
You've seen this tape, right? The one with the college gymnast, Caitlin Ohashi, and her phenomenal floor routine. It started making the rounds on Twitter this weekend.
Yeah, it's super funny. Last weekend was their opener, and I went on Twitter and I was like, who's going to watch UCLA Gymnastics? And all these people laughed at me. They were like, I think just you. So I was like, all right. Okay.
Rebecca saw this video way before I did. She used to compete as a gymnast. Now she writes about competitive gymnastics for Slate.
So I saw that routine, you know, I've seen it before. I didn't see it this weekend. I saw it last weekend. Everybody who watches NCAA gymnastics did. And we've all, it's all old hat to us already. All right, so she's gearing up for her first tumbling run now.
In this video, Caitlin Ohashi, who is a senior at UCLA, she's doing all the regular floor routine stuff, running and flipping, but she's also dancing, accompanied by a pop and R&B soundtrack. Tina Turner, Michael Jackson. The thing that really gets me about this routine, the reason I've watched it over and over again, is Caitlin's face.
Sticks her tongue out a little bit. No one ever does that. Having an incredible time.
I wanted to watch this video with Rebecca because she sees this video pretty differently than I do. And I think she sees it pretty differently than the hundreds of thousands of people who liked and shared it online did, too. Like when we watched Caitlin's very last tumbling run.
So flip, 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 split jump, and then she lands in the splits. First time she did that, everybody thought it was a mistake. Yeah, so that's one of these things that's like only in the NCAA because it looks completely amazing, but it's really easy.
It's really easy?
It's really easy.
What Rebecca's saying here is that there are really two kinds of gymnastics in this country. The elite kind, the kind that goes to the Olympics and wins medals, and this kind, college gymnastics. But I'm going to call it the fun kind.
Everybody in gymnastics can do the splits. Everybody can do the splits. The splits, you learn the splits when you're 5 years old. And the floor on a gymnastics mat actually has like 16 inches of mats and springs. And so it's like almost like a trampoline. But then there are things that people really liked about this routine that are completely common to the entire NCAA, which is the teammates doing the choreography in the background and everybody freaking out at the end when they did a good job and the smiling and the fact that everybody looks like they have ever eaten a meal. All those things are NCAA standard.
Okay, can we talk about how weird it is, though, that like you're like smiling is unique to NCAA and like looking like they've eaten is unique to NCAA?
That's a little bit of an exaggeration. Elite gymnastics has changed quite a bit. They do eat now. They look like they eat, but it's true that they don't smile that much.
Caitlin Ohashi used to live in that world, the one where you don't eat and you don't smile. Today, we're taking a break from the shutdown and Brexit, and we're going to talk about this video because it's at the nexus of a bunch of stories. The imploding national gymnastics program, the abuses suffered by young women gymnasts, and the price of being world class. Can we just start by talking a little bit about who Caitlin Ohashi is?
Mm-hmm.
So she was actually the last person to beat Simone Biles, right?
Yeah, I believe so. At the 2013 American Cup, she was in the most tragic of all positions because she was the best elite in the world in the year after an Olympics. The way that the elite world works is gymnasts age out of their peak performance so quickly. You generally have your peak years for about 1 or 2 years at the most, unless you're Simone Biles, but that's a different conversation altogether. Normal human gymnasts peak for about 1 or 2 years, and then either they injure out or they just grow and their center of gravity changes and they can't do what they used to be able to do. And so Caitlin Ohashi was at the absolute peak of her genius as an elite in 2013, which meant that there were 3 more years until the next Olympics, where if the Olympics had been held in 2013, she would have won.
And she was a kid then, right? Like, how old was she then?
Like 15 or 16.
She was this little kind of dynamo. Can you describe her as an athlete?
She looked like a wounded bird. Her face had this fear on it all the time. It was nothing like the confident, swaggy, awesome young woman that we see today. She looked like she would break.
I mean, she talks openly about the sacrifice of being an elite gymnast. She was told she was too heavy. She was compared to a bird that was too fat to get off the ground.
There's been a lot of talk of changing the culture to emphasize health more than tininess. With Caitlin Ohashi especially, she doesn't ever name any names, but there were forces in her life that were very negative, over and above the well-documented abuse that happened at the Caroli Ranch. There were both coaching and potentially familial forces in her life that were putting a tremendous amount of pressure on her to train through injury and possibly to undereat.
She published these diary entries from when she was competing as an elite gymnast.
Yeah.
And she says stuff in these diary entries like, I'm currently experiencing some hunger pains, but if I go to sleep right now, I can sleep it away. Or, I know bulimia is not healthy, but it could be the only thing to save me. And as a mom, as a human, honestly, it's shocking.
Yeah, I mean, she comes from a culture where until, again, very, very recently, essentially the gymnasts were starved. I mean, now that the Carolis aren't in charge anymore, so much is coming out about, you know, lots of stuff has been coming out for years in tell-all memoirs by various former elites. But as long as the U.S. program kept winning medals, it didn't really stick. And it really took the Larry Nassar scandal to blow the top off of what was really going on at the Caroli Ranch for all of those years. And one of the things, among all of the other abuses, where gymnasts were routinely, allegedly, you know, berated and humiliated and made to work while injured, is that they weren't fed enough.
You know, you're talking about the Caroli Ranch. I just want to take a second and sort of remind listeners who Bella Caroli was, because I have a very clear memory of him, particularly when Carrie Strug was competing in gymnastics, because she, did she break her foot? She injured her foot.
She sprained it.
She is limping. Carrie is hurt.
Oh, this could be really bad news, John.
Strug either turned.
You can do it. You can do it. You can do it.
And he put her back out there to perform. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The United States team was about to win a gold medal. And in order for them to do so, Carrie Strug had to finish. She had to land a vault on her feet. He made the decision to have her do it again. She had the adrenaline to do it again. It was, I remember I watched that live. I was in college at the time and I could not believe what I was seeing.
Bella Caroli wasn't just the coach of the U.S. gymnastics team. He and his wife ran an elite training camp, the Caroli Ranch, and top U.S. gymnasts would go there regularly to train, maybe for 1 week a month. And as we found out over the past 2 years, there were a lot of abuses at their camp.
You basically had to do whatever the people in charge of the camp told you to do. If they wanted you to work out, even though you were injured, you did. If they wanted you to eat a certain thing, you did. And so the gymnasts report that they were broken down so much that they were especially vulnerable to somebody who was kind to them. Enter Larry Nassar. So he used this environment to groom them, essentially, by being their confidant and friend and sneaking them in treats, etc.
You can find video of Caitlin Ohashi back when she was training as an elite gymnast. She looks serious, and sad.
Brand new routine for Caitlin. I know she was really excited about this routine because she said she even gets to smile a little bit in the middle.
And after this performance, Caitlin decided to leave the highest levels of the sport. Collegiate gymnastics became an escape for her.
She was very, very injured, and she just did not think that she was going to be able to compete on the elite level well. And she was also broken. She was miserable. That's when she started eating like a human again, and that's when she hooked up with Miss Val, and they started talking, and then she decided she wanted to come to UCLA. And I think the reason that she chose UCLA is because Miss Val has a reputation for this joyful dancing culture.
Yeah, Miss Val has run UCLA's gymnastics program for a long time, but she was actually never a gymnast herself, right?
Yeah, she was a dancer, hence her name. She goes by, all ballet mistresses go by Miss first name, regardless of their age, marital status, or whatever. So that is her. That's the marker that she is and always will be a ballet mistress.
Yeah, if you could just sum up for me, like, what is the Miss Val experience? Like, what is it to go to UCLA?
UCLA is the place you want to go if you want the Miss Val experience, where you're doing stratospherically different things on the floor exercise and beam. Every single practice they do is filmed, and every single trick that anybody does is wildly cheered by everybody else. Always. So anytime anybody's practicing, the whole rest of the team is like, yes, get it. Great. Perfect.
It's so funny because Caitlin actually said college gymnastics is the reward we receive after years of abuse. It's like the opposite of that Bella Caroli sort of idea of what this sport is, which is sort of go get them, go get them, go get them, go get them. You.
Yeah. Well, there is a lot of camaraderie on the elite level. It's just that by the time you get into the elite level, you're one person. You don't have the people that you train with every day. You don't have a community. You're isolated. It's a very isolating and lonely life, because the other thing about elites is that they work out 9 to 10 hours a day.
Yeah. The other thing that's interesting to me is that this video went viral at this moment where USA Gymnastics is kind of piecing itself back together. And USA Gymnastics, for people who don't know, we should explain, it's basically the way that people get on the Olympic team in the United States. It was like a year ago that Larry Nassar was found guilty of this awful abuse of US gymnasts. Can you explain a little bit for folks who may not be paying close attention, what has changed in the last year?
Oh, well, the U.S. Olympic Committee has moved to strip USA Gymnastics of its governing body status and effectively leave gymnastics in the United States without a governing body, which isn't just elite gymnastics. That's like all gymnastics, little kids, everybody. And then in response, USA Gymnastics declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And so that's going to halt the decertification process while they're going through Chapter 11. And it will also allow them potentially to, because they're being sued by all of Larry Nassar's survivors. And so the Chapter 11 process will allow them to pay settlements to the survivors. And so USA Gymnastics is incomplete. It's a rotting carcass. It's just in complete and total shambles. While at the same time, the actual gymnasts who compete on the international level for the United States are literally the best that any gymnasts have ever been.
I just wonder when this sort of Olympic level performance has become synonymous with this awful abuse. It's hard not to look at a video like the one of Caitlin Ohashi and say, like, why wouldn't this be Olympic level?
I don't know what can be done to fix USA Gymnastics. I'll tell you this, though. If what it needs to be fixed to the point where its athletes are no longer overburdened and overworked would potentially signal the end of the dominance of the U.S. gymnastics program in the world.
Really? So you're basically saying the abuse is necessary?
Not the sexual abuse. I'm not a monster. But I do think that the Soviet-style centralized training and overtraining, the institution of that camp system, directly correlates with the rise and dominance of the U.S. program.
Whoa! I mean,
I'm not saying that I support USA Gymnastics or the semi-centralized training system. My personal view is that people's humanity is more important than gold medals. Even more so, I would like to see the entire sport from the international level down value humanity more than gold medals. I'm not sure how that is going to be accomplished, or if the people who are important want that to be accomplished. But that's not to say that I don't want it to be accomplished.
You just don't see the way out.
I don't currently see the way out. I mean, I think one of the reasons that Caitlin Ohashi's routine is so incredibly magnetic is because it's not just her joy. Like, you can see that her joy is a triumph over something.
You really can. You really can. You can see that she's like seeing the dark side and she's kind of like walking towards the light.
Exactly. And so we also have to think, like, what do we get out of that? How important to us as viewers, casual or expert, is it that she has been through the darkness before she gets to the light? Like, what? How complicit even is the casual viewer who thinks that this is the greatest thing that they've ever seen? Because what in her triumph has appealed to them?
Rebecca, thank you so much for making the time and standing close to your router.
I really appreciate it. All right, I got to go back to the salt mines.
All right, take care.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We couldn't end today's show without going down one more rabbit hole, the government shutdown. This week, nearly 500,000 government workers are reporting for duty, but they won't get a paycheck. Even more aren't going to the office at all. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, members are getting paid, but it doesn't seem like they're doing that much.
I mean, it's surreal trying to report this out, like the longest shutdown in government history, but the most newsless shutdown in government history.
Jim Newell's our guy on Capitol Hill.
I went around today and just asked anyone, like, any progress? There was a bipartisan group that met yesterday to sort of discuss and ask them, any progress? Not really, they said. You know, they said we had a good conversation, but they didn't come up with a plan or anything. So
yesterday, the president invited Democrats to have lunch with him in the White House. They didn't show up. Later in the afternoon, Democrats marched to Mitch McConnell's office to demand he hold a vote to open up the government. But what's the end game here? I feel like...
Good question.
It's been 4 weeks, and it doesn't seem like anyone here is any closer to a solution.
No, there's been zero progress. I think, you know, when it looked like Trump might declare the national emergency, which has... ridiculous as that might have been, that was for some a way out because it would get locked up in courts for a while. And, you know, if Congress can get off the hook without having to take a vote on anything, secretly they may want it. But when that fell off the table, Trump said he wouldn't do it, at least now. He kicked the ball back into Congress, and Congress has no idea.
It costs now more than Trump actually wanted for the wall, is what I read.
Right.
Which seems... insane. Like,
I think a lot more than the wall would have cost. Yeah.
All right, Jim Newell, I have a feeling we're going to do it again, if not tomorrow, like later in the week.
Yeah, just don't expect any news.
All right, that's the show. What Next is hosted by me and produced by Mary Wilson and Jason DeLeon, with help from Danielle Hewitt. Find us on Apple Podcasts. Leave a review for us there. We will see it. We will love it. Follow me on Twitter at Mary's Desk. Talk to you tomorrow.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.